effortlessly. And there's a whole host of dogs that just run effortlessly. When you look at them running, it's just like they're just floating over the ground. I don't think I run like that. Diz Runs Radio episode 627 starts in 3, 2. Welcome back to Diz Runs Radio, where I talk with runners from all corners of the running world about running, life, and everything in between. I'm your host, Denny Cray, and it's just about time to head out the door for an easy run and a great conversation. So if you're ready, then I'm ready. Let's get started. Well, 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 here we are again. If you look at a calendar, you are no doubt aware that another month is winding down. Apparently, also according to the calendar, it is officially fall now. Although, you know, note to Florida, still hasn't seemed to be much of a difference yet from the normal heat and humidity. Fall typically starts here around, around Thanksgiving time, at least for us here in the States. Around Canadian Thanksgiving, it's still going to be boiling hot summer here. But finally, when we get to mid-November, it might hopefully start to feel like fall. But regardless of what the weather feels like outside, we go by the calendar month when it comes to listener Q&A episodes, and that's what we've got on tap for today. The monthly edition of You Ask, I Answer, where hopefully I can give you a few tips and tricks and hints to help you get through whatever running-related issues you're dealing with, or enlighten you slash make you laugh a little bit about some of the questions that are a little bit less running-focused and a little bit more life and everything in between. As I've said before, but if you're new, maybe you haven't heard this message before, if you would like to get your questions answered on the monthly Q&A episode that we do, the best thing that you can do is head over on the Facebook and join our group, our tribe, as it were. Just go to DizRuns.com/Facebook, or if you're on the Facebook, or next time you're on Facebook, just type in the search bar, the DizRuns tribe, and click to join. We have a pretty... you know, open policy of you're innocent until proven creepy, borrowing that line from Michael O'Neill from the Solopreneur Hour, meaning that, you know, if you ask to join the group, we're going to let you in. And then if you start spamming it and being basically we have a no douche policy. So if you start to be a douche, we kick you out. Really, really that simple. So, you know, come in, ask questions, troll a little bit, post some memes, post some GIFs, all that good stuff. That's all fine and dandy. Start coming in and, spamming us with all kinds of stuff that nobody is interested in. Well, now we got a problem, and we'll kick you out. But we don't make you prove your innocence. We assume that you're a good member of a good Facebook group, and we want you part of it. So if you want to get your questions answered, join the group, and then be on the lookout for the post that I do somewhere in the middle of the month, usually, or maybe kind of the getting towards the second half, somewhere in there, between the 15th and maybe the 20th or so of each month. I'll put up a post that says, hey, what are your questions for this month? You put the questions in the comments. I go ahead and answer them when we get to the Q&A episode. So pretty darn simple. And if you have a question or concern or something that maybe is a little bit more, requires a little more depth, a little bit more feedback and conversation between the two of us than what you would get from, you know, putting up a post in a Facebook group and waiting a couple of weeks or a couple of days at least for an answer, you can always schedule a consult call. Go to dizruns.com/consultation, and all the details are there. We jump on the phone for 20, 30 minutes, whatever it takes to really work through the issue that you're dealing with, get you a clear conscience, clear mind, clear path established that can help you keep moving forward in your own, you know, journey towards whatever goals that you're working on, just whatever kind of information you might need. So dizruns.com/consultation if you want a little bit more personalized information, or at least a little bit more in-depth because of the fact that we're on the phone talking as opposed to let me just read your question from Facebook and try to answer it. So that option is always there as well. So without any further ado, we've got a lot of questions today, a lot of great questions today. So let's dive right in, shall we? And hopefully I won't get too verbose in my answers, and we can keep this at or around an hour, but we will see if that happens. So the first question comes from Kevin Matheson, who says, I know I posted this question. He posted this on the actual page itself and got a lot of great feedback, but, you know, as any friendly member of the running community, he's posting his question here as well. So those of you that aren't in the group or missed that post can still get the thoughts and feedback as well. So maybe you could address how to come back from injuries and or an extended layoff from running. What should it look like to build back up? When do you add in speed work? what kind of time frame should you allow to be back to quote unquote normal? Now, obviously for a question like this, Kevin, and we discussed this in your original post, but obviously there's a lot of variables at play here based on, you know, what was the injury or what was the cause of the layoff? How long were you out? What were you doing, if anything, to try to maintain some of that fitness while you weren't running? What kind of goals do you have? Where are you in, do you have a race coming up that we have to try to get ready for? There's a lot of variables at play here. But assuming that there's nothing imminent, we've got all the time in the world, and we want to be smart about it, the biggest thing you can do, the best thing you can do is to really build back up slowly. Start maybe not quite from square one, but pretty darn close, you know, with really being cautious, not over anxious, not trying to push too much, not trying to go too fast, not trying to go too far. And what gets a lot of folks in trouble is we start playing the comparison game between where we were before the injury or before the layoff and where we are now. And it's frustrating because we've lost however much fitness, we've lost however much endurance, and we're trying to get back to where we were quickly. So, you know, if you've been out for a couple of weeks, it's like, all right, well, I know what I was doing a couple of weeks ago or a couple of months ago, so let me go out and see if I can still do that now. Odds are you can't. And odds are if you keep trying to force yourself to do what you were doing before you took your break without building up more gradually, you're going to re-aggravate your injury. You're going to cause a new injury. You're going to be frustrated and just say, the hell with it. I'm done with running because I lost so much fitness and I'm so frustrated. And obviously none of those situations are what we want. So start slow, start easy. I've heard a rule of thumb, which, I mean, I'm not the biggest fan of rules of thumb, but at least it's something to kind of keep in the back of your head that as long as you're out, that's as long as it's going to take you to get back to where you were. So if you didn't run for 3 months because of an injury, you shouldn't expect to be back to where you were pre-injury for at least 3 months of consistent training again, building back up slowly over time, taking into account where you are right now. And maybe before the injury, you're running 5 days a week, but now you need to be only running 3 days a week at first. Build some of that endurance back up, build some of that resistance to fatigue back up, and then eventually introduce a fourth day, introduce a fifth day. I'm not going to give you a timeline, because every situation is always going to be different. And even with the same, you know, the same issue, you could have 10 runners that all have a hamstring strain, and the amount of time it's going to take them to get back to where they were pre-strain is going to be different for each of those 10 people based on all the variables we discussed and countless other variables as well. But progress slowly, progress intelligently, listen to your body. Don't be afraid to take an extra day or two to recover or an extra unplanned off day, because the last thing you want to do is re-aggravate an issue that you've hopefully solved. You've hopefully licked it, but it may not be quite 100% yet. And especially with some soft tissue injuries, strains, specifically as it relates to muscles, there's a pretty good chance of re-injury if you try to do too much too quickly. And you can get away with running easy, earlier in the process, but you can't get away with pushing hard. So you might be able to start rebuilding your base fairly early in the process, you know, and some of the times that I've tweaked some muscles and strained a calf or strained a something here and there, I've been able to get back to running after maybe just a few days off, but I've kept it very, very easy, not trying to push the pace, not trying to do any type of tempo work or any type of race pace work or, heaven forbid, any type of speed work, because those are the areas where you're going to really put the most stress, strain, pressure on the injury and most likely to cause a flare-up. So when you're getting back from an injury or back from time off, start with a lot of base building, a lot of slow, easy running. And then when you get to start to mix in some higher intensity stuff, start with the longer duration, lower intensity of the high intensity, if that makes sense. So, you know, you're going to run your 1 mile repeats a fair bit slower than you're going to run 400 meter repeats. You're going to probably run your tempo miles even slower than those 1 mile repeats. So maybe that's where you start, is with 1 or 2 miles at tempo pace. Get comfortable pushing it a little bit, but not too much. See how your body responds. If all goes well, maybe the next week you add a little bit more. So you're doing 3 or 4 miles at tempo pace. See how your body responds. A week or two later, maybe now you're mixing in some longer repeats. So 2 by 1 mile, 3 by 1 mile, something like that. But again, starting very, very slow, very, very basic, and gradually building yourself up. Because you'd rather take 6 weeks to get all the way back into your routine than to try to do it in 3, suffer a setback, and now you're out for another 2 months. So when in doubt, especially when you're coming back from injury, err on the side of caution. Hopefully all that helps for you, Kevin. And obviously if you have additional questions about your specific situation, let me know. Alan's got the next question. He says, what key runs do I need to include each week? How many times should I be running in each week? And then Chris gave a little plug for the book in there, because that is something that we talk about in the book. And then we also have another question kind of related to this a bit later on. But what key runs do you include each week? Well, it again, lots of variables, always lots of variables, but it kind of depends on what you're training for, what your goals are, where you are as far as your fitness goes. But let's assume, Alan, and anybody that's kind of having the same type of question, that we're training for a longer distance race, half marathon, marathon, ultra, whatever the case might be. And depending on where you are, that could even be a 10K or a 5K, depending on where you are in your fitness. But you want to have, if you're training for something that's a longer endurance type of event for you, you want to have probably each week a long run, something that forces you to be out there, get some time on your feet, moving along at a slow, easy pace, all right? Because that's all about building your endurance, building your resistance to fatigue, and getting some time on your feet, which is huge for these longer distance races. So that's a big one. It's a good thing to have a couple of fairly easy, low intensity, short-ish runs during the week as well. And again, short is relative depending on what distances you're running, distances you're training for, how much time you have, all that type of stuff. But getting a couple of relaxed, easy runs is a good thing for building up the base, keeping things strong, keeping your core, base of fitness going. And then if you have time to mix in a speed workout or two, there's nothing wrong with that. And when I say a speed workout or two, I mean, I really probably mean in most cases one. Although if you're training, if you're pretty well established as a runner, you got a pretty good base, you might be able to get in two, depending on what they are, depending on how spaced apart they are. You want to be smart here. Don't want to overdo it. But, one or two good hard workouts a week. And the good hard workouts can look like a bunch of different things. It could be a tempo run. It could be a interval repeat. It could be hill repeats. It could be, a fartlek run. There's a whole host of options that talk about a lot of them in the book. There's a lot of them on the website. There's a lot of them on various other websites of different type of workouts you can do. Repeats based on duration, repeats based on distance. Again, no shortage of options. Pick one. And then, next week, pick something different. So you're working yourself a little bit differently, but you're working at that higher intensity. The key thing, I think, is to not overdo it. Listen to your body and don't be married to your plan. So if your body's telling you that it needs a break, take a day. If your body's telling you that it's tapped out, instead of forcing a speed workout, just run easy or just get a little extra sleep, whatever you need. So, being flexible is important, but mixing things up, mostly easy, something a little bit longer, and then maybe something a little bit harder. That's usually a pretty good mix for a lot of folks. But again, there's a lot of variables at play there that are going to color that one way or another in each unique situation. But great question, Alan, and hopefully that is helpful, at least a little bit. Next question comes from Brittany. She says, I wanted to thank you for answering my question last month regarding staying motivated as a beginner. I think I was falling into the comparison trap. Stupid jealousy. Lol. Well, you're welcome, Brittany. Thanks for writing in. Hopefully this month's question or this month's answer will help you as well. So for this month, she says, can you recommend any cross-training activities or stretches to help with lower back pain after running? Yes, and it's not something that requires a lot of overthinking here. Keeping it simple is usually the best bet. So first, why is your back bothering you after a run? Now, there could be a whole host of options here, but physiologically, it's not uncommon for runners to have tight backs, low back pain. And the reason for that is that when our hamstrings are tight, which for a lot of runners, not all runners, but a lot of runners, we aren't exactly Gumbies over here. So we've got some tightness. We've got some tight muscles. Not always easy to just bend right on down and touch your toes. If that's the case, when your hamstrings are really tight, they attach onto the top part of your pelvis. The top part of your hamstring actually attaches at the top part of your pelvis. And when that muscle is really tight, it can actually roll your pelvis back a little bit. Now, we're talking about fractions of an inch, micrometers of a distance. But that little bit of posterior pelvic rotation can and does put extra stress and strain on the muscles of your low back. Put extra stress and strain on the muscles of your low back, and they're going to start barking at you. They're going to be that low back pain. And so what happens after a run, after you've worked those muscles in your hamstrings, they're starting to cool back down. They're starting to tighten back up. They put a little bit more pull on that pelvis. In a lot of cases, this may or may not be your case, Brittany, but in a lot of cases, they put a little more pull on that pelvis. And all of a sudden, wow, God, my back is killing me after that run. So how do you solve that? How do you prevent that? Of course, having a good cool down is always helpful, but probably the best thing, stretch. Work on that flexibility of your hamstrings. You can do some yoga. You can just do some static stretching where you're leaning forward, touching down towards your toes. You can sit on the floor, do one leg, you know, one in, one out as far as the leg position, leaning forward with both hands, reaching towards your toes of your one foot that's extended out, then switch sides, go to the other side. Anything that's going to improve your flexibility, especially in your hamstrings, is going to, in most cases, help your back. And if you're not sure exactly what to do, I did a video post, back when I was still doing videos regularly, that was all about this. And I linked that up in the show notes. So, Brittany, if you want to see a little bit more information, I think there's some demonstrations of some stretches as well. Dizruns.com/627, 627 down there, wherever I talked about your question, not too far down the page. There is a link right there, linked in the post. It'll take you right back to the post from a couple years ago now when I talked about lower back pain with runners. It's not uncommon, but, you know, again, if you just work on stretching, in a lot of cases, that's going to solve a lot of your problems. So hopefully that helps. Hopefully you get some relief sooner rather than later, because low back pain is no bueno. One other thing to add that is a good idea as well, working on your core strength. And again, as I've said before, core is more than just your abs. So working on your abs, your sides, your obliques, and your lower back muscles, making those muscles strong is going to help to A, prevent some of that rotation of your pelvis, and B, take some of that pressure off of your back. So, you know, stretching is probably the first bet for most folks. Core strength, core stability is also important. And if neither of those things seem to help, then maybe that's where you check out seeing a chiropractor or other, a PT, somebody that can look at things, make sure there's no alignment issues, make sure that there's no, you know, other things going on structurally that we don't know about, but that could be also contributing to the low back pain. And, you know, ultimately that would be the thing that would solve your problem. So hopefully all that helps, Brittany. Hopefully all of that makes sense. And thank you once again for your question. Julie, great question this week. She says, if you had to write a note to your coach and explain your running style by comparing it to a dog breed, what kind of dog would you be? Obviously, there's a little bit of something to this question. Julie is one of the athletes I work with, one of the Diz runners. And last week or a couple weeks ago, whenever it was, she said, I felt like, I can't remember what type of dog breed it was, but some kind of crazy big dog breed that's not the most beautiful of a running dog, is how she felt during one of her runs, which I got a good chuckle out of. I thought it was pretty funny. So apparently the tables have been turned, and she wants to know what kind of dog breed I would be. So I think I settled on a Doberman. I think that's my choice. Why? Why would I consider myself a Doberman? Well, I'm definitely not, you know, the type of breed, if you will, that was designed to run. I'm not the most fluent runner. You know, when I look at my dogs, when I look at Tank, my American Bulldog, he is not a runner at all. When I look at Bailey, my German short hair mix, she like looks like she floats. Like she just like runs effortlessly. And there's a whole host of dogs that just run effortlessly. When you look at them running, it's just like they're just floating over the ground. I don't think I run like that. I don't think I look awkward. I don't think I look like Tank when I'm running. I don't think I look like American Bulldog or, you know, some type of big, muscular, non-running dog. I'm not all over the place. But like a Doberman, you know, they're not naturals. They're not completely bred for running, but they get the job done. They get the job done. They run pretty well. They don't look out of place when they're out there running. They might not be the fastest. They might not be able to run forever, but you know, they get the job done. And I like to think that that's kind of where I am as a dog right now. I'm not a dog that can run for days and days and days. I'm not going to win. I'm not a greyhound. I'm not winning any races. But I'm not Tank. You know, I'm not an American Bulldog. I'm not a pug. I'm not an English Bulldog, for heaven's sake. Although I love a good English Bulldog. But just all the flaps of skin all over the place, short legs, stubby, just, they don't run very well. But, you know, when it comes down to it, I think a nice kind of big breed. I'm always going to be a big breed person over a small breed person. Powerful dog like a Doberman. Maybe I'm not quite as muscular as most Dobermans, but you know, like I said, I do all right out there. But I'm not anybody's definition of just, you know, I don't maybe you know, fit the ideal body type of a runner. But I get the job done. I get the job done. So I think a Doberman is my answer. Hopefully, all that makes sense. But great, great question, Julia. That's a fun one for sure. Next question comes from Dana. How do you gauge what pace you will, quote unquote, race a marathon at? I know my average pace for all the K races, 5K, 10K, 15K, and for a half marathon. How should I calculate what I should expect for a full marathon? I did my first one just for the Disney experience, but I want to be able to say that I actually, quote unquote, tried my best for the next one. Thanks. So Dana, you know, there's a whole host of calculators out there that you can plug in your information in, and that'll give you ideas. I am not a calculator person. I'm not a predictor person, because every distance is different. You attack every distance differently. And depending on what your training's like, what your fitness is like, you know, just because you can run a good, hard, fast 5K, 10K, half marathon, whatever, doesn't mean that you're going to be, you know, right along the same type of pace, or just, you know, incrementally slower because it's longer distance for the marathon. They're such, especially the marathon, it's such a different animal, that it's really hard to quote unquote predict. That said, you know, I think that a lot of times, as far as, you know, how do you determine it? Obviously, a bit of it goes into how your training goes. How did things go? How are you doing? But I think maybe the best advice, and this is not going to help answer your question at all, so I somewhat apologize for that, but, you know, I'm going to try to give you the best advice, try to give you something to help you. I think the best advice comes from Chuck Van Duzy, who was on the show, gosh, I don't remember exactly how far back, but it's been a minute. Let me see if I can find a show number right here. But Chuck was an old school guy. He's run hundreds of marathons. He's in his, I don't know, 70s maybe, something like that. Still going strong. Episode 573 at disruns.com/573 will take you there. And he, when we were talking, he said that, you know, he thinks that sometimes, maybe a lot of times, people get so caught up in what their goal pace is supposed to be, that on race day, that actually can be a limiting factor in how well they do, because, you know, they're saying that, all right, I'm going to try to run, you know, a 9-minute split. So I'm going to try to come in just under 4 hours, and they stick to it and come in just under 4 hours. So goal success, right? Well, if they hadn't used that watch to try to hold them in a certain place, perhaps if they just listened to their body, they could have run 3:45. Because their body was strong, their body was fit, but they had this thing in their head that says that I can quote unquote only do this, so I don't want to overdo it and get myself in trouble. But if you're willing to listen to your body, you might be able to perform even better than what your expectations are. So that's something that I've tried to do, and I've had pretty darn good success with it. Listening to my body, pushing hard, still being able to finish strong, not going out too fast, not going out too slow, just running each mile, running each step, based on, you know, how well I think I can do. And what Chuck said, you know, running as fast as you can, knowing the distance of the race. So knowing how much farther you have to go. You know, you don't want to go out in a sprint, of course, in a marathon, you're going to be in trouble. But at the same time, you know, if you're feeling good, listen to your body and push it a little bit. So how do you know what pace you will race a marathon at? I don't think so much of pace anymore. And in fact, when I race, I turn that off. I look at my distance and I look at my time, and that's it. And of course, you know, I know enough about the math to know kind of how I'm doing at various points along the race. And my watch does show me my split at the end of each mile. Sometimes I check it, sometimes I don't, but I try to just run by how I'm feeling, listening to my body. And at least for the last couple of races I've done, that seems to be working for me. So that's what I'm going to keep doing. If you're ballsy enough to do that, Dana, I'd encourage you to try it. It's scary. I've had a couple of my athletes try it. I've had a couple of athletes that said, oh, hell no. And that's fine. That's fine. If you don't want to try it, don't try it. But you know, it can be very surprising to see how much faster you can do when you take the shackles off and stop trying to limit yourself because you think you're only capable of 4 hours, when in actuality, on the day of the race, because things are you're feeling really well and the weather conditions are perfect, you might be closer to 3:45. Who knows? So I challenge you to think about at least trying that and see what that does for you. And if it works. But great question, Dana. And sorry, I don't have a better answer as far as a formula, but I just don't think that there are formulas. I think it's all trial and error. And you kind of got to figure out a combination of what your goals are versus how your training's gone versus how you're feeling versus a lot of different things. So it's tough. It's tough for sure. Next question comes from Robin. She says, as someone who lived in Michigan, what half marathons would you say are worth the road trip? Coming from Wisconsin, the UP is preferred, but I'll take any suggestions. Robin, I'm sorry, but I don't have much for you because I literally can't think of a single race that I ever ran when I lived in Michigan. I wasn't much of a runner back in my growing up days. The only quote-unquote race I ran was E-Coop, which is the name of the annual 10-mile race that our high school cross-country team did. I don't know if they still do it or not, but back in the day, they did E-Coop every year. At the end of the fall sports season, they did a school-wide race, 10 miles, sponsored by the cross-country team, open to any student or faculty member. I did it my senior year. It was kind of one of those things where a couple of my buddies were like, I'll do it if you'll do it. Well, I'll do it if you'll do it. None of us thought the others would do it, but none of us was willing to be the one that backed down. So we all did it. Not an official race by any stretch, but that's the only race that I ran in Michigan. So I kind of have a pretty strict policy of not recommending races that I haven't run because there's so many great races out there. So since I can't give you specific races, and since you said you'd rather run in the UP, I would definitely say that pretty much anything in the UP in the fall is going to be amazing. It's going to be fantastic. Just the fall colors, the cool temperatures, whether you're up in Menominee or Houghton or anything like that, on the south side of the UP and Manistique would be probably, I don't know what races are there, but there's got to be some, I would imagine. And it's going to be a pretty part of the world, hopefully not too far of a drive. If you want to drive a little bit farther, Mackinac Island has some races, and I think that would be pretty good. I've heard that a couple of clients that have thought about running Mackinac City Half Marathon. So that might be in play, but that is a little bit more of a hike coming from Wisconsin. You got to come all the way across the Upper Peninsula. But that would be a pretty great race, and you get some good fudge while you're on the island as well. There's certainly no shortage of options, and I think as long as the time of the year is right, you're not gonna get a bad experience. And a couple other pro tips for you, Robin, or anybody else that visits the UP: make sure you get some pasties while you're up there. And no, that's not the nipple covers. It's food. Get some pasties and get some smoked whitefish. Stuff is divine. It's almost worth making the road trip across the bridge just to get the smoked fish. Stuff is that good. So a couple of suggestions for any time you're in the UP: pasties and smoked fish. Can't go wrong. Can't go wrong. But if you end up finding a race, Robin, let me know. And so I can always, just know what other races are out there, what other options are available. But there's got to be a few, at least, in the Upper Peninsula. I mean, and Sault Ste. Marie wouldn't be a bad one either. You cross over into Canada as well. That wouldn't be a bad option, assuming it exists. Next question comes from Lisa. What types of strength training would you focus on during training for a first marathon, especially in those long run portions of the training schedule when it's, when time is limited and everything is compressed? When you're trying to get these long runs in. Great question, Lisa. And the ideal, if we're talking about an ideal situation, the ideal situation, of course, is that you maintain a good, regular, consistent strength training schedule, strength training routine, all the time, because it is important. That said, I understand that life is life. And when you're used to training maybe a couple hour long run, and then you start training for this marathon, and now you're looking at 3 hour long run, maybe a 4 hour long run, depending on your pace, maybe even longer than that, depending on your pace, that starts to constrict how much time you have on the weekends, how much time you have other days of the week when you're adding some more mileage to those midweek runs, things like that. It gets tough. And, the strength training is one of those things that pays off when you're consistent over time, but it's pretty easy to chop it off the schedule and not notice that much of a fallback. Whatever. I'm not strength training all of a sudden. Everything still feels about the same. But over time, of course, that's going to not pay you any dividends. So kudos to you for trying to figure out what can I do to try to maintain as much as I can? What's the most important things? And then maybe, hopefully, I'm reading between the lines here, but hopefully after you get past your first marathon, you'll get back to a bit more in-depth strength training routine. So with that in mind, I would say that the things you want to focus on are your hips, your glutes, and your core. If you can keep your hips, your glutes, and your core strong, those are all muscles that are vital for maintaining good form, for keeping you going, later in the race when your body starts to get fatigued. If you've got good, strong glutes, it's going to keep your legs moving forward. It's going to keep you going, keep you upright. Having your core, it helps to prevent, too much motion and the wasted motion in the middle part of your body. It helps to prevent some running related injuries by having a stable core. Helps you breathe better. Lots of good things there. Hips, same thing. I mean, hips and glutes, they're fairly closely related, and even into the core as well. So if you focus on that kind of central area of your body, that's going to really be vital. Yes, working your legs is important. Yes, working your upper body is also important. But if push comes to shove, and this doesn't have to be just during marathon training, it could be any time of the year when life gets a little crazy, keeping a little extra focus on your hips, your glutes, and your core is huge. And the best part about those body parts, especially, you can do them on the living room floor while you're watching TV. You can do them without going to the gym. You don't have to do any special, you don't need a bunch of extra weights. Body weight is great. Doing planks, crunches, bridges, hip extensions, clamshells, fire hydrants, donkey kicks, reverse crunches, Superman, swimmers. There's a whole host of options you can do. And again, you don't need to do all of them, but, mix and match, mix them around, hit your body from different angles, but hitting those same body parts a couple, three times a week, you're looking at 10, 15 minutes, two or three times a week. You're golden. So hips, glutes, and what did I say? Core are the big three areas that I would definitely encourage you to focus on, Lisa. It's going to help you keep moving at the later stages of those races, later stages of those training runs, and also going to hopefully help you keep you healthy, which is priority number one when it comes to running for your first race. So congrats, you know, good luck. Can't wait to hear how that first marathon goes. And if there's any other questions along the way, you know where to find me, and hopefully we can keep you going and have that first marathon be a great experience for you. Next question comes from Chris. How many races is normal each month when doing a 5K and 10K and in between of training for a half? I mean, you know, kind of depends on what your definition of normal is. For me, I would say that normal is zero. I don't think that that's the case for you, Chris. There was a lot of great discussion in the thread following this question based on kind of what your goals are, what you're working towards, how you run each race. So you could mix in, you know, a 5K or a 10K as part of your training for the half and not really race them all out as these are the races that I'm doing, but actually kind of race them as, you know, the goal race pace at the end of a long run, or mix them in as speed work in the middle part of a long run. You know, there's different ways that you can attack it, and you can kind of incorporate some of those smaller distance races that maybe they're smaller races in your community, things like that. Still run them, still participate in them, and still support the causes that maybe that's a big part of the draw of being part of those races, but not sacrifice the training for your big goal, which I'm going to assume is the half marathon, for the sake of running a hard 5K. So, you know, be smart, mix them in. You know, I have some athletes that are racing, it seems like, just about every weekend, but they're not necessarily racing every weekend, even though they're running a race, I guess is what I'm trying to say. They run a race just about every weekend, but a lot of times it's part of a long run, or it's part of their training. Like, instead of doing speed work that week, they do the 5K. So they can push it, they can run it hard, but now that they're not getting speed work that week because that is their speed workout. So mix it into your training. You can do that. How many is normal? I don't know. I mean, it depends. I don't do any of those. Some people do a lot of those. It just kind of depends on what works for you. And if you enjoy it, you can do it, but don't sacrifice a long run to run a 5K and think that you're going to be ready to go when the half marathon rolls around if you've been just doing 5Ks and 10Ks two or three times a month instead of those long runs. That's not a good recipe. So be smart, but there's a lot of variables at play as far as how you incorporate those shorter races into a good, solid training plan that's still going to help you be ready to go by the time your race rolls around. Shelby asks, how much emphasis should we put on turnover rate? I don't know how accurate my Garmin is, but it says I'm usually around 169. If I pick up the pace, I'm in the 170s, but I can't maintain that pace. I've tried to change my stride, but it hasn't really worked. You want to know what I think about cadence? Meh. I don't think it matters. I don't think it's that important. Now, if your cadence is 120, yeah, you probably got some improvement you can do there. But, you know, there's cadence, the idea that we need to be at 180 cadence is so, I don't know if I want to say ridiculous, but it's so misguided. It's so one size fits all that it makes me want to freaking scream right now. And not at you, Shelby, but just in general, that whoever, shoe companies, the data companies, the Garmins, the Footpods, the things like that have put that out there that, like, you need to monitor your cadence because if you're not at 180, you're leaving seconds on the table. Bullshit. It's not the case. Some people, you know, would do well to improve closer to 180. Some people that, and it sounds maybe like you're one of them, you know, you're at 168, 169, you're feeling good, you're able to go, but if you start to pick it up, you know, you're asking yourself to do too much. The difference between 169 cadence and 180 is like nothing. I mean, come on, man. Not you specifically, Shelby, but just this idea that 180 is this mecca. If we can achieve 180, like all of our wildest running dreams are going to come true. Not the case. So if I'm you running at 169, perfect. I don't have any idea what my cadence is, and I don't care. I don't care. I think cadence is one of those stats that falls into itself or falls into place where whatever your ideal is, which could be anywhere from 160 to 190, you know, is anywhere in there can be perfect for you. It just depends on you. So if 169 feels right, that's good enough for me. I hope it's good enough for you. But I think that cadence turnover rate is, you know, unless you're running like a 100-meter dash, but if you're running long distance, man, that is such an overhyped stat that don't waste any more mental effort to try to improve that than what you've done. Just let it go. Run what feels right to you, and you'll be good. Next question comes from Melody. Serious question. What do you mean when you say you checked your HRV? How does that affect your decision to run? So if you missed it last week, I guess, or something like that, I did a post on Instagram where I'd gotten up, was ready to go run, and checked my HRV, which is the heart rate variability score or rating or measurement, whatever you want to call it. And it was low. It was lower than I was expecting it to be. And so I made the decision to not run that day. Why? Well, what is that? So your HRV, your heart rate variability is, you know, if you put the words together, it's pretty self-explanatory. It's what is the variation between your heart beats. So we think about heart rate and you think about your beats, you know, looking at an EKG or something like that, it's ba-boom, ba-boom, ba-boom. And the HRV measures how much, you know, space there is between each beat. We think that our heart rate's pretty even, pretty metronomic. It's actually not. It can be. When we're under stress, when we're working hard, or when we're just under life stress, physical stress, mental stress, fatigue, our heart rate tends to be more metronomic. It has a pretty steady rhythm, pretty steady difference between beats. And we're talking about, you know, fractions of a second, but, you know, when you're measuring it, you know, that's what you're measuring. When we're more relaxed, when we're well rested, when we're not fatigued, when we're not, you know, broken down physically or mentally, there's more of a gap between our heart rate. So sometimes it might be real close together. It might go ba-boom, 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 ba-boom. And so the HRV measures the average, I guess, kind of the mean of all of those differences between the heart rates and gives you a score. I use an app for it. It's called, what is it called? Let me pull up my phone here. It is the Elite HRV app. It's a free app that you have to have a heart rate strap or some, preferably a heart rate strap, that measures your electrical impulses, that also is Bluetooth compatible. So the Garmin straps don't always work. I got a Wahoo strap for that. And, you know, I measure it every morning and keep note of where it is, what the number is. And, you know, if it starts to get a little bit lower, I start to think, well, maybe I shouldn't run today. Maybe my body is still recovering from a previous workout. Maybe I didn't sleep well last night. Maybe I'm just, you know, stressed because Addison is a handful, whatever it is. There's a reason my body is not ready to run hard that day. So, you know, last week I decided that the number was low. My legs felt a little bit kind of, I was a little bit tired, and, you know, put all those factors together and just say, you know what? Today is a good day to not run. Today's a good day to just, you know, do a little extra meditation, just sit and relax and enjoy some peace and quiet in the house, because, you know, with a 4-year-old, you don't get that all the time. So I'm just going to relax. And I think I made the right call. And part of that factor was that, you know, that was a Thursday run that I posted that. I knew I had 20 miles on schedule for the weekend that I really wanted to do. So I didn't want to burn myself down even more going into this longer run. I wanted to sacrifice a day or two early, rest, recover, and then be ready to go for a good long run that weekend. So that's kind of how it, you know, that's a bit about what it does. I'm not an expert on HRV yet. It's something I'm interested in. I'm learning more about, looking to take a course on it here at some point, not too much longer, because I do want to learn more about it, both for myself and for the folks I work with that are interested in it, or just those of you that listen that are interested. I can give you some more information about it. But, you know, I use that as a factor. I don't use that as a sole decision maker. You know, just because my HRV is sky high, which means I should be well rested, doesn't mean that I feel good, you know, and just because it's rock bottom doesn't mean that I can't still go run. But it's one factor that helps me determine on a day-to-day basis of listening to my body, should I go today? Should I go hard today? Should I make today a real easy day? Should I make today a not run day at all? All of that, you know, that daily decision that I make, that's part of the factor, is that my HRV score. So it's interesting. It takes some of that how do I feel out of the equation and really looks at the actual what is my body saying, and I use that to help make that decision. So hopefully all that makes sense. And if you just, you know, look at, you know, do some Googling of heart rate variability, you'll find lots of articles out there, and hopefully some of them actually make sense, because it's kind of technical and it can get a little bit lost in the weeds a bit, which is why I'm trying to learn more about it so I can hopefully continue to explain it in a way that actually does make a bit of sense. So great question, Melody. Now, next question from Melody. A not serious question. She says, why are there so many songs about rainbows and what's on the side? Man, I don't know. I don't know. You know, whatever. I don't really care for songs about rainbows, but that's just me. Never a big fan of the Muppets either. So, you know, call me what you will. Call me what you will. Next question comes from Melody. Serious question. Who is your favorite Disney character? Slam dunk. It's Goofy. I don't know why, but I don't know. Ever since I was 8 or 9, something like that, Goofy's been my guy. Big Goofy fan. And again, don't really know why, but it is what it is. And you know, being a Disney person, obviously that's a very serious question. That's not a non-serious question. Who's your favorite Disney character? That one's serious business. Definitely the Goofy. At least if we're talking about the kind of the main Disney characters. If you started getting into the tangents on different movies and things like that, I don't know. I'd have to think a bit more. But you know, when it comes to just kind of the main Disney characters, the traditional ones, Goofy, hands down. Chris, I had a question, but then found the answer in your book. So have a shameless plug for Be Ready on Race Day. Go buy it if you haven't already, people. Well, thank you, Chris. Obviously, I didn't have to read that, or else I'll give a plug too. But thank you. And glad, you know, on a more serious note, glad to know that the book is helpful. Glad to know that there are some answers in that book, especially with a question coming up where maybe I didn't cover something as clearly as I'd hoped. Glad to know that there are some answers there. So if you haven't checked out the book yet, y'all, Be Ready on Race Day is the website. Feedback, takeaways, whatever you thought about the book, always appreciate it. And if you want to promote it to those around you, that's always appreciated as well. Next question comes from Jeff. How long does it take to recover from a calf strain in your experience? Is kinesiology tape the solution to training through? I have a 100-kilometer relay race event in a couple of weeks, but I need to increase my fitness plus fix the injury before then to get it to get to requested speed to complete my 14 laps. Any advice is appreciated. Jeff, my advice to you is that the ship has already sailed in terms of increasing your fitness. From a physiological perspective, it takes about 2 weeks for anything that you're doing to actually impact your ability to perform. So any training takes about 2 weeks to pay dividends, which, not coincidentally, is why tapers are usually right around 2 weeks in duration, because there's nothing that you're going to do in those 2 weeks before your race that's going to make you more physically fit and able to race better. Now, mentally, we have a hard time accepting that, but that's the science. That's the science. So, you know, with 2 weeks to go, you got a strain in your calf. I mean, my best advice is to not do a whole lot of training. Maybe do some spin bike, maybe do some swimming, do some cross training, do some other things to keep your, you know, to make you feel mentally like you're still working. And we do need to do a couple things to help keep the fitness where it is to prevent it from regressing. But as long as you're doing a workout or two each week, you're not going to lose much of any fitness. And you're also obviously going to feel better, get stronger, recover. Hopefully your calf is going to heal as well. But you know, a good calf strain, how long does it take? I mean, multiple weeks, not just two. Would kinesiology tape help? It would be a Band-Aid. It might help you get through this one race. But it might not. It might not. It depends on how bad it is. It depends on how fast you're running. Running slow and easy, you're going to have a better chance of getting your miles in without aggravating the strain. If you're pushing the pace, whether you're racing or training, that's when you're putting the most tension, most stress on the muscles. That's when you're most likely to re-aggravate it or make something worse. So, you know, as I'm reading your note here, I have a 100-kilometer race where you're doing 14 laps in a couple of weeks and you're trying to improve your fitness. This is a bad recipe. This is a bad, bad, bad recipe. And it sucks. It sucks when you get an injury that close to the race day. But, I mean, you know, I got to tell you the truth, right? I got to try to give you the best advice possible. This whole situation doesn't sound very good. Doesn't sound very good at all. So if you're really trying to push hard and you know, really blow it out of the water on race day, man, you are behind the eight ball, in terms of A, you're not going to be able to improve your fitness in 2 weeks, and B, even with the kinesiology tape, I mean, I'm not saying that guaranteed you're going to blow your calf out while you're pushing it on race day, but boy, the chances are good that you're going to have some serious problems there, even with the tape. So good luck, Jeff. I hope it goes well for you, but man, it's not a good situation that you're finding yourself in right now. Next question comes from Matthew. Says, as you are now training to run marathons that you will be speaking at, does this add a sense of pressure, or do you feel that the speech is more of the focus? Right now, without a question, the speech is much more of the focus, Matthew. The race is the icing on the cake. You know, I want to go in there and do well, but, you know, I mean, I'm not exactly doing everything right in the days leading up to the race. So, you know, for the most part, when I'm at these races, if I'm speaking the night before, that's a big focus. You know, that's something I'm going to be doing. So I'm not going to be getting into bed maybe as early as I want to. I'm maybe not eating at the time that I want to, because this is, you know, usually around a type of dinner. And a lot of times those dinners are pasta based, which is something I'm not going to eat. So I'm going to, you know, have to eat something before that or after that or whatever that fits more of my high fat, low carbs type of way of fueling. You know, and if possible, I'm also going to be at the expo all day. I'm going to be at the expo promoting my speaking event, trying to get more people there. I'm going to maybe try to sell a few books. I'm going to maybe try to get a few people to listen to the podcast. So, you know, I'm going to be busy all day the day before the race. So if the race was really the focus, you know, I wouldn't be good putting myself in a good situation, I guess is what I'm trying to say. So my focus is 100% on the speaking gig and then, you know, just run the race and have fun. And it's easy for me to do right now because I'm not at a point where, you know, I'm close to BQing or anything like that. And, you know, I like to think I'm close to PR shape, but, you know, it hasn't happened on race day yet. But who knows? Maybe this fall it will. Although with back-to-back races, that makes it a little bit more dicey, to say the least. Back-to-back marathons 1 week apart, it's kind of hard to push either of those too hard, but we'll see what happens. But I feel zero pressure in terms of race day performance. The race is just gravy. Give me a chance to get another state to, you know, experience an event so that I can go into my database of what did I like about this race? Would I recommend it? But I have no performance anxiety right now when it comes to my racing. That much is true. Jeff Whalen coming back with another question. This is further to the above question. If you are only running marathons in conjunction with speaking at them, do you think that you will be able to complete your 50-state challenge this way? Also, could you advise us how many states you're up to? So, you know, I don't know that I'll get to speak in all 50 states. I mean, that's certainly the goal, Jeff, but, you know, it may or may not happen. I'm okay with that. I'm okay with shilling out for some money on my own to travel to a race, to bring the family on a vacation, to go somewhere and run a race. But, you know, I mean, if I can get half, if I can get three quarters of the states by speaking there, why not? Why not take advantage of it, run some different races, meet some different people? You know, I mean, this is my job. So anything I can do to coordinate with other races and make those relationships and you know, that helps me, that helps them. I mean, that's ultimately how I'm pitching it to them, is that this is a win-win situation. You're helping me grow. I'm helping you grow. I'm helping bring more awareness to your race, hopefully bringing some of my audience members, some of my tribe to run with me. You know, everybody wins here, you know, so we can make that work. You know, and as things continue to grow and continue to hopefully look more and more promising, then who knows? Maybe I get more attention from some of these races and it really does become something that is easy to do. And I have my pick of races every month or two. Where do I want to go? Which states haven't I been to yet? Those types of decisions. We're not quite there yet, but we're getting there. You know, and when it comes to states, currently I'm at 6. If all goes to plan in the next 3 weeks, I'll be at 8. And I mean, I've already got a couple of discussions going that could put me at 10 states by the end of February, you know, and that would be 5 states between September and February. So Idaho, you know, Prairie Fire in October, in Kansas, Seven Bridges in October, the week after in Tennessee. And then the two that I'm not going to announce yet because they're not official, but looking like there might be a possibility of an Alabama race and a North Carolina race as well. So, you know, things are moving in the right direction. I haven't crossed a state off my list in 4 years. And now all of a sudden it's starting to get into the speaking thing and working with some of these other races to have, maybe not always speaking, but having a partnership, having a relationship, you know, might knock out 5 more states in another 6 months. That's pretty good. That's pretty good for me. And like I said, if that continues to grow, who knows? Maybe we'll get to all 50 and then some because of this. That would be all right in my book, you know? So we'll see what happens. Next question comes from Trevor. How long do you personally get out of a pair of ultras? Depends on the shoe. Depends on, you know, and obviously it's going to be one person, each person's experience is going to be different, but you're asking how much do I get? I've never gotten less than 500 miles out of a pair of ultras. Had some shoes that have gone over 800 miles, most of them somewhere in the middle. And, you know, again, it depends on the shoe. It depends on, you know, on a lot of factors as far as surface I'm running on, things like that. But those are my road shoes. Always between 500 and up to a little bit over 800 miles. I don't track them super specifically, but if I had to, you know, look at the calendar and go, all right, well, I've had these shoes for 6 months now and I've been, you know, X number of miles. Well, shoot, like I've gotten a lot of miles on these shoes. No wonder it's time to get a new pair. That's how far I get out of them. Your mileage may vary, but I've had very good luck with the life of my shoes. That has a lot to do with how I run. Pretty neutral runner. You know, and that makes a difference as well, surface. But I mean, we're talking all roads and concrete here, so it's pretty good surface, pretty good life out of the shoes. So that's part of the reason why I'm such a fan of them. Even before I started kind of being associated with them as an ambassador and whatnot, I mean, I was getting lots of miles out of my shoe, and you know, shoes can be expensive. So if you can get 400, 500, 600, 700 miles out of a pair of shoes and not have any issues, well, shoot, that's a selling feature to me. And that's what I've found with my experience with ultras. Not everybody's been as lucky. Some models work better than others, and you know, some people have, you know, that they have needs that, you know, as far as form, mechanics, things like that, that maybe they need to adjust their shoes more quickly. But for me, 500 to 800. Hopefully, if you try the shoes, Trevor, you'll be able to see a similar amount of life in those shoes that work well for you. Adu, My big race of the season is coming up. It's a 10 miler and I'm actually going head to head versus a few people. I'm not sure how they have been training, but my question is, can you talk about a few race strategies? I'm considering hanging back with them as a pack and then go at it in the last 3K, or should I do surges of 2Ks after mile 5, kind of like intervals, and others to lead the pack, but I feel like the leader carries all the burden, so no bueno. What do you think? I think your first option or first thing you mentioned there is the best option. Kind of the sit and kick, the ride with them. Like you said, when you're leading, especially if you're out there pushing the pace, it's always easier to chase than it is to be chased, to be the predator instead of the prey. And so if you're out there and you know, I'm assuming this is like everybody knows that you're actually racing each other. It's not one of those where it's like, all right, I know so-and-so is going to be there and I'm going to beat him. But you all know each other and you know that, all right, we are legit racing this race, bragging rights, who wins. I like the idea of sitting with them. You know, if they're way off the pace, then maybe you move up a bit, but you know, for the most part, there's a reason that, you know, when you see people go out to a fast start on a marathon, on a track, whatever it is, the pack usually ends up catching them because there's just something about being out there by yourself. It's kind of lonely. It's easy to fall off the pace. But when you're just running with everybody, you're racing each other instead of racing the clock, which is completely different. If you're racing the clock, you're going for a PR, then you just got to go. But you're racing these people. You're racing them, not the clock so much. So sit with them, ride with them. And then, yeah, around the last 3K or so, last couple miles, that's when you make your move. Because that way you can go, you can push it, you know you've got the fitness to finish out those last couple of miles, but it's not so much that you're going to blow your too much steam too quickly and end up falling back and getting crushed by them at the end. So, you know, right around 2 miles to go, right around 3K, if you're feeling good, feeling strong, that's the time to make your move. And if one of them tries to go too early, take some discipline, but you can let them go. And trust that your strategy is going to work well. But if y'all are racing each other, I got a feeling it's going to be a sit and kick kind of race. And hopefully you've been doing the type of training that gets some fast finish stuff, so you'll be feeling strong in the last 2 miles of the race. So good luck with that. And it's an exciting, different way to race than what most of us do. So can't wait to hear how that goes for you. I do. Next question. Still got a handful more. We got a lot of questions this month, trying to move through them fairly quickly, but it looks like we are definitely going to be over an hour. So thanks for bearing with me. And if you need to break this up and come back and finish up, hey, totally get it. That's the beauty of podcasting, right? You just press pause, and when you come back, it's like you didn't even miss a thing. So here we go. Next question comes from Katie, but first, a little coffee on my end. All right, next question comes from Katie. I need some advice. I have been running for about a year. I run on average 30 minutes 3 times a week. She says, I try to do one long run a week, included in the 3, but sometimes it's a 4th run. I wouldn't say I've been religious about this, but pretty good. I started with run-walk. If I'm not running, I'm doing CrossFit, but I do work out at least 4 times a week, usually 5. So question, I still am run walking. I'm trying heart rate training, but I run for about 20 seconds and then I have to walk. When will I actually get a good base? I'm getting so frustrated. Any advice or suggestions would be helpful. So the first gut feeling on this one, Katie, and I know there was a lot of conversation on this. You had also posted this somewhere and there was a lot of great conversation in that thread and a lot of great advice. But the first thing I'm thinking is that maybe you need to slow down a bit during those 20 seconds. If you're going like 20 seconds balls to the wall, well, yeah. I mean, that's no matter how fit you are, if you're going as hard as you can go, we usually get about 20 seconds before we have to stop and catch our breath. So if you're pushing way too hard on your run segments, then it would make sense that you're struggling to get any better than 20 or any longer than 20 seconds of run walk. So with that in mind, if you can slow down your run, you're probably going to be able to increase things out, or at least feels you know, less worn out at the end of each 20 seconds. Now, when it comes to trying to build up, I get the impression from this that you're trying to get to where you're straight running instead of run walking. And to be clear, nothing wrong with run walking. A couple of athletes, that's what they do, and that's what we work with. And by God, we get quite a bit faster, even though we're still run walking. So there's no shade about run walking. But if you yourself, Katie, want to get on to straight running, the best thing you can do is gradually, incrementally increase that time that you're running. So, you know, get to where you can comfortably do the 20 seconds and then your walk break and then 20 seconds, and then your walk break, and then bump that up to 30. You know, don't try to go cold turkey. Don't try to go all in on, all right, well, now I'm going to just run up for a mile. Bump that up, get to 30 seconds and then your walk break. Then eventually you get to 40 seconds or 45 seconds and eventually you get to a minute and you keep bumping that up, pretty soon your run and walk are even. Then maybe you start to trim back on the walk a little bit. So you're running for 2 minutes and now you're walking for 80 seconds. And then you're running for 2 minutes and now you're walking for 1 minute. and pretty soon your walk break is very short, then you can start to dabble in going straight through without walking. No harm in walking. I walk a lot. it's part of my heart rate training. It's not always a strategic run walk, but there's nothing wrong with it. No harm in it. But if that's what you're trying to build from, build gradually. And the other thing, like I said, make sure that you're not pushing too hard on those runs. You know, if you're looking for endurance here, not speed fitness, which maybe that's a habit from CrossFit of going hard all the time. But as an endurance runner, you got to work on controlling that pace. So see if slowing down doesn't help. And all of a sudden you might feel like you could jump all the way up to a 1 minute, 1 minute, or a 2 minute, 1 minute type of thing, just by slowing down that run pace, and keep training by heart rate. That's a great way to do it as well. It just takes time. It takes some patience, but I would think after a year, you should be seeing some progress. So check your pace. That is, my gut thought is that you're going too hard on your run segments. And if you just back off there a little bit, you'll see some big progress. So, good luck though, Katie, and keep us posted. If you have other questions, of course, bring them to the group. We'll be happy to help. Next question. I think there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 more to go. Next question comes from Dan. It says, I'm running a fall half and I'd like to go under 2 hours. I have been successfully running with pacers in the past, but I believe that my best chance of success will be to run a negative split. But is there a magic formula for running negative splits and hitting a goal time? No, Dan, there is no magical formula for anything. But in all seriousness, though, I like the idea of negative splits. It's what I usually try to work with my athletes to do. It's what I have finally experienced for myself in the marathon and Pocatello. I ran my first negative split marathon, which is great. And it definitely, I felt good. It's the best I've ever felt at the end of a marathon. But there is no magic formula to making it happen. What you have to do to negative split and to hit your goal with a negative split, you have to be disciplined. You have to be smart. You have to run intelligently. And those things are easy to say, but on race day, they can be hard to do. You get caught up in the excitement. You get starting to worry about, am I going to feel strong at the end of the race? So you push too much at the beginning, and that sets you up to be in a bad place for the last couple of miles. So, what I would encourage you to do, if a negative split is your best, is what you think you need to do. And, that's what you want to commit to. So the thing that I like to try to do for myself and for my athletes is to say, all right, so what does that average out to be? So a 2 hour marathon, I believe, is a 9:06 average pace. So, all right. So your overall average needs to be, 9:05 or better. So what you do then is you start out with the first mile, set the goal of 9:30. Yes, that's slower than what you need to do. I get it. Run the first mile at 9:30, run the second mile at 9:15. And then by the time you get to the third mile, be settled in at about 9:05, maybe 9 flat, something like that, right about your goal pace. And then hold that goal pace for the next 3 to 5 miles, 7 miles, something like that, till you're between, mile 8, 9, 10, somewhere in there. And that's where you get your time back. That's where you start to push a little bit and go faster than goal pace. So, that first half, you ran the first 2 miles slower than goal pace, and then you settled in on mile 3 through the first half. So it's scary. It's nerve-wracking to do that. You think you're giving up all this time and, my God, I'm going to be tired at the end. But if the training's gone well, you're going to have enough gas left in the tank to then, over the last 5K, make up those 45 seconds and then some to put yourself back under goal pace. So that's how you run a negative split, or at least that's how I run a negative split. It's how I coach people to run a negative split. It all comes down to the execution. It's real easy on paper. It's real easy for me to tell you how to do it, but you've got to execute. You've got to be disciplined at the beginning and not go out too fast. You've got to be comfortable on just holding goal pace then for the middle, the middle 3 miles, 4 miles, 5 miles, 6 miles, before you finally turn it back on for the last 3 or 4 miles and slowly but surely make up that time. You don't have to do it all in 1 mile, make up 10 seconds a mile, 10 seconds a mile, 20 seconds a mile, and then kick it on the last mile. And you'll make up all that time you gave up in the middle, in the beginning, you make up and then some. You'll finish with a nice negative split and finish below your goal time. So that is the logistical way of running a negative split. Then it just comes down to doing it. Comes down to doing it. And it's definitely an easier said than done type of situation. But good luck. Good luck, Dan. Hope it works out for you. Another question from Dan says, be ready on race day. Did a real good job on defining the different types of tempo runs and different types of intervals. But how often do you incorporate tempo runs and intervals into your training plan? Between long runs, easy runs, rest days, and the week only being 7 days long, it seems like you would be limited. You would have a limited amount of time to incorporate both tempo runs or intervals in your training plan. So great question, Dan. And sorry I wasn't clear on that in the book, but it definitely depends. It depends is how to answer that question. If you're trying to run, say, 5 days a week, so you got your long run, you've got probably two, at least two, hopefully maybe 3 easy days. And then you've got that one extra day that kind of becomes your hard run day. So what I would do is use that fifth day, or it could be your fourth day if you're only running 4 days a week. So you got your long run, 2 easy runs, and then a fourth day. Mix it up. So 1 week you do a tempo run. The next week maybe you do a speed workout. The week following that you do some hills. You switch back to a tempo run, then a different speed workout. So you're always mixing it up. You're always hitting your body from a different angle, a different way, but you're always pushing your body hard that one day each week. If you've been running longer, you got more fitness, you might be able to do 2 times a week of doing that. So you can do a tempo run and a speed workout and vary your speed workouts, vary your tempo routes to add a little variety there. But there's no hard and fast rule of how you do it. But, and then there's some folks that I work with and myself, and this definitely is where I'm at with my training these days, where I mix in a speed workout like once a month or once every 3 weeks or something like that. So it's a different, it's very minimal, but when we hit it hard and we get the maximum benefit out of it. And then I give my body a chance to recover before I hit it again. So, there's a few different ways you can do it, but you definitely don't have to try to do all of them. You don't have to try to do them all on a regular basis. You can kind of mix and match, pick and choose the winner for you, choose your own adventure, if you will. But I will say that the ones that you don't like doing are probably the ones you need to do the most because they're the hardest ones. So a tempo run, long repeats, short repeats, they're all good. They all work your body in different ways. And a little bit of variety goes a long way towards helping you become a better, well-rounded runner and athlete. So mix them up. But don't try to overthink it. Don't try to think you have to get all of them in a single week. You've got nothing but the rest of your life. So you got no shortage of time to mix in some of the different workouts, and vary things up a little bit. And of course it always comes down to listening to your body. You don't have to feel like you have to do these workouts. If your body is tired, sore, fatigued, then skip it. Take an extra day off. Just run easy instead of hard and let your body tell you when you're ready to push it hard again. So thanks for the questions, Dan. Hopefully both of those make a little bit of sense, and hopefully they both help you to have a great race and nail your time, be under 2 hours for the half marathon. Keep us posted for sure. Next question comes from Karen. She says, how slow should you really run your long runs for marathon training? It's a tough one there, Karen. I would make the argument, so a lot of people would argue against me, but I would make the argument that there's no such thing as too slow. So, slow it on down, whatever feels comfortable, whatever is easy. I think that's really the thing is, less worrying about pace, especially in training, but worrying about effort. Are you pushing hard? Are you working hard? Are you cruising? Could you carry on a conversation? Could you keep kind of going at this pace for a while as opposed to like feeling like you're going to die a mile before you finish the workout? If you're running at an easy level at a moderate heart rate, if you're keeping track of your heart rate, what it should be. As long as you're staying underneath that limit, you're good. And it doesn't matter how fast or slow you are. All that matters is your effort. Now, if you're not doing that, definitely want to keep it easy. We're looking at building your base, building your fitness at this point. This isn't a race. On race day, you're going to be able to go, and you're going to go hard. Depending on the distance that you're running for a marathon, you're going to go 26.2 miles. You're going to push it. Your heart rate's going to be high those days. But in training, we don't want that. We don't want that because we want to be able to keep going, keep building day after day, week after week. And if you're pushing too hard all the time, you're running a chance of injury, you're running a chance of increased fatigue, needing more time off, breaking up that improvement, that momentum, and really makes it hard to make progress. So how slow? I don't know. A couple minutes per mile slower than goal pace, maybe. But it really depends. And I think that speed can be the wrong metric. How easy? It should feel pretty comfortable is what we're going for. Unless you're doing a long run workout where you're mixing in some goal pace, or you're mixing in a fast finish, or you're mixing in something where you're pushing it for a little bit. In that case, you want to be easy except for when you're pushing it, and then you want to be hitting your zone, hitting your area, hitting your target pace, hitting your target heart rate, whatever it is, so that you're getting the maximum benefit out of that section where you're pushing the pace. But the rest of it, look at my Garmin data. I'm anywhere from usually, 10 and a half to 13, 14 minutes, depending on, which mile it is. Early in the long run, I'm usually a bit faster because my heart rate's, I'm not fatigued yet. My heart's still beating slow. And then as the long run gets longer, I'm getting fatigued. The sun starts to come up, so it's getting hotter. All of a sudden, I got to walk a lot more than I can run to keep my heart rate in the right zone. So, but as long as I'm staying below my target number, which is 141 beats per minute, I really could care less about my speed. Maybe I'm a different animal than most. Maybe I've drunk too much of this heart rate Kool-Aid, but that's where I stand. That speed really doesn't matter. It's time on your feet. It's getting the workout in. It's getting the work in, and not pushing too hard. That's going to pay crazy dividends on race day. As counterintuitive that is, it really does work out. So hopefully that helps, Karen, although I kind of recognize that it's probably not the clearest answer, but don't worry about pace. Worry about effort and not pushing too hard on those long runs. Two questions left. One from Melody. What does Addie think of her mom and dad running? Do you think she's inherited the running gene? So, Addie's four. I'm not sure that she thinks too much about it other than that's just something that we do. So hopefully that's the lesson. Hopefully that's the takeaway, is that she recognizes that being active, being healthy, exercising, working out, whether it's running, whether it's playing sports, whatever it is, that's just something that that we do. That's a normal part of our life. And hopefully that she, as a dad, I want to see that in her. I don't really care what pursuit she goes after. As long as she's enjoying herself, pushing herself, trying to be healthy, that's obviously the goal. Do I think she's inherited the running gene? I'm not sure that either Rebecca or myself really have the running gene, but she definitely, Addie definitely runs. You know, she runs at the track at school. That's part of their PE. They run the track at least once a week, I think, a quarter of a mile, and she's pretty good. She can run the quarter mile without stopping. When she goes out for a walk with us with the dogs, she often runs way up ahead. If she's only walking with me, I just let her go. She knows where she can turn around and come back. If it's with Rebecca, she's got to start and stop because Rebecca isn't as keen on just letting her get out of sight in the neighborhood, but I really don't care. I care, but I'm trustful of my neighbors. I'm not worried about her in our neighborhood. She's got some fitness. She can run pretty well. She runs with the dog sometimes, not so much with Tank because he doesn't run it at all, but after Bailey goes potty, she'll grab the leash and run with her home. And Bailey, my running partner dog, does a great job of just, not pulling her, not running too fast, just running right next to her. Actually, has better leash manners when Addie's on the leash than she does when I'm on the leash. So, something to be said about that. But right now she's four. She enjoys running. Hopefully from a selfish perspective, that'll continue. But, like I said, the goal is, I would assume all of us that have kids would agree, healthy, happy kids. That's what we're going for. So whether that's running, softball, basketball, volleyball, cheerleading, boy, no offense to the cheerleaders out there, but it's just not my thing. And I married one, so I can feel like I can say that. But, whatever she does that she wants to do that keeps her happy, and keeps her moving, keeps her active, keeps her healthy, that's great. And if it's running, icing on the cake. And if it's not running while she's in high school, but maybe, when she's in her 20s or 30s, she wants to run a race with her old man, you better believe I'll be fit and able to do that and want to do that with her. So we'll see what happens down the road. Nice question there, Melody. Thank you for that one. And last but not least, another one from Adu. Who best benefits from heart rate training? Who do you recommend it to? He says, I am not interested in it for one reason alone. I already know how annoyed I am at being a slave to numbers and tech, but nonetheless, I help a few people with their running, and I'm curious on your opinion as a coach. So this may be that, the answer that you kind of expect from a guy who's admittedly drunk in the Kool-Aid as it relates to heart rate training, but I honestly don't think that I can't think of any situation where a runner wouldn't benefit from it. If heart rate training is all about increasing your efficiency at a lower level of intensity. So, there's benefits to training hard. There's benefits to doing speed workouts. Even all of the heart rate gurus all promote doing hard speed work. It's valuable. It's beneficial. It's good for us as humans. It's good for us as runners. But the bulk of the training should be, according to them and according to me, should be easy, should be, at a low heart rate. Because what that does is that primes your engine so that when you go hard, you're able to go hard without overtaxing your body, which means you can keep going hard longer. So on race day, I do train all my runs usually below 135 beats per minute. Every once in a while we creep up towards that 140, 141 range, which is where I really do cut it off. But usually I'm well below that. On race day, I'm up in the 160s, 170s, and not feeling that like I'm working that hard. That's the goal. That's the improvement that we're looking for, is that, you're training your body to be efficient at 135, 140 beats per minute, 120, 150, whatever you set your number to be. You're training your body to be efficient there. And then when you hammer it, either for a workout or for a race, you're getting much more bang for your buck at the lower levels of intensity. Maybe you're able to push goal pace without creeping your heart rate into a higher, too high of a zone where you're not going to be able to maintain it as long. So that's the science behind it. And I mean, the science checks out, and you can't tell me that doesn't help anybody, no matter where you are, what level you're at. A strong heart, an efficient heart is going to help you. And I mean, most of the elites do it too. We look at their numbers and we lose sight of the fact that because they're running their easy runs at 7:30 pace, that can't be easy. But for them, their heart rate might be 115 beats a minute at 7:30 pace. Well, God, that qualifies as easy. That's real easy. Easier than I run most of my runs at when I'm averaging, you know, 10:30 pace. So it's easy. Then when they're hammering that 4:40 pace on marathon day, you know, then they're working hard, but their bodies are used to working easy, more efficient. So they're not working at maximal. That's why they can look like they're running 4:45 pace and, you know, not look like they're working that hard, because they're not. They're not working in the red zone at that point. They might be working higher than their you know, low heart rate zone, but they're not working in a max zone either. So I can't think of anybody that wouldn't benefit from it. The only people that wouldn't benefit from it might be somebody like yourself, Adu, who doesn't want to get bogged down in the numbers, doesn't want to get bogged down in the tech, doesn't want to be, and maybe this isn't so much for you, that's not the other one, but isn't disciplined enough to stick with it, because it takes some time. It takes some effort. It takes swallowing your pride and knowing that a lot of your runs on Strava aren't going to look that impressive, because they're not. But then on race day, when you're running 3 minutes or 4 minutes per mile faster than your training pace, meh, that's kind of worth it. That's pretty impressive right there. So, you know, if you don't have the discipline to stick with it, it's probably not for you. But if you want to be running forever, or maybe not forever, but you want to be running long-term pursuit of goals, long-term progress, long-term good health, you know, heart rate training. Admittedly, again, I've drunk the Kool-Aid. I'm all in on it for myself. I don't push my athletes into it, but I kind of encourage it. I try to weasel in those easy runs often. To keep them going and keep them strong, keep them fit. So yeah, I think everybody would benefit from it. I really, really, truly do. So that is it for today. That's all the questions. We are well over an hour. Whew. Goodness gracious, my voice is feeling it. Hopefully, it doesn't sound too bad yet. But I can tell that I've been yapping for a bit longer than I'm used to. So I'm gonna go ahead and keep the exit of this interview or this episode short, sweet, to the point. Thank you guys. Thank you all for the questions. Thanks everybody who chimed in this month. And once again, if you want your questions answered next month, because we're going to do this again, we're going to be doing this again in October, you can count on it. DizRuns.com/Facebook. Join the group if you haven't done so already. And, you know, when I put the post out, chime in, add your questions to the queue. We'll be sure to answer them on the October episode of the show. And again, if you want a little bit more custom feedback, kind of help me fully understand your challenge and really give you a good solution, consult call is your best bet. DizRuns.com/consultation. And that'll take you right there. All the information is there. Pricing, how to schedule it, all that good stuff. It's super simple. I've had a few of them recently. Had a great chance to talk to some folks, hopefully help them out as well. And I'm happy to do that for you as well if you're interested. DizRuns.com/consultation. And with that, we'll go ahead and wrap this thing up. Thank you guys for listening. As always, certainly appreciate it. And until next time, please be well. Take good care. Thanks again for listening. And we'll talk soon, all right? Take care, guys.